Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Cathode Ray Emission. I'm your host, Adam Ferens, and tonight our topics will be horror films and horror television. So joining me tonight are Alan Bryan, returning after a long hiatus. Say hello.
Hi, I was in the Phantom Zone. Bye.
Yeah. He was hiding behind a rock from Zod. Aaron White, say hello.
Hello.
And Carl, who does not get to see greetings and salutations.
I can't say anything.
No, because the cat got your tongue and the monkey's paw is playing with it.
Ooh.
I'll play with the monkey's paw. Never mind.
Tonight's episode is going to be a little different. Full disclosure, I've been under the weather, but the show must go on. So tonight I'm going to try to act a little bit more as a facilitator than a participant. But before we jump into this show, which I want to be pretty loose, I did want to start with this question of how do we define horror? And I will throw this out to you, Aaron, and then whoever wants to pick it up can carry it from there. So, Aaron?
I think that horror is anything that is designed specifically to trigger the emotion of terror. I think Stephen King put it aptly when he said that terror is the most pure of human emotions, and I am always working to evoke terror, and if I can't, I want to evoke horror, and if I can't do that, I'll go for the gross out. I'm not proud. I think that those are the three stages of the horror genre. I think that the best work evokes terror, and the good work evokes horror, and then sometimes they just pull up and go for the gross out, and sometimes the gross out works, but usually it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. So anybody have anything to say to that?
I think anything
is me.
Let's
see. I think Carl started first. So Carl,
anything that evokes some sort of fear. Now that can also include psychological. It can even denote certain, like serial killer movies, so on and so forth, like Henry, Portrait of Serial Killer. Things of that sort. It's not just monsters. It's not just ghosts, vampires, that sort of thing. Sometimes the true monsters are human beings. So mm-hmm. You got to put in some logical to that.
Absolutely. I mean, look at, I haven't seen the movie. I hadn't seen the movie since I was a kid. So when I saw that Criterion had added it, they had added The Raven and The Black Cat. Now, The Raven isn't as good as The Black Cat, but The Black Cat is a heck of a psychological horror film. And that's a very, very early one for, the talking era. And it's quite effective. I don't know if you guys have seen it.
That's the Omer, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Of course. And yeah, it's got some creepy stuff in it. There's no question about that. Just the
mm-hmm.
house, just the house they're in is scary. The weird Art Deco mansion there.
Yeah.
Well, for whatever scares me, it can be a simple thing. I know what scared me as a kid. Dark Shadows had episodes that scared me. So it was a low budget soap opera, yeah. But when they started talking about when they had the werewolf and they talked about the Leviathan and some other episodes, I was eight, nine years old. It scared me. And then this is not film or television, but this got me hoping. When I heard The Shining was going to be a movie, I thought, oh, that'll be cool because I'll get to see the hedge animals move. Because in the book, I was scared when the kid thought the hedge animals, that's in the book, had actually moved. And I'm thinking, mm-hmm. Oh, my God. You know, if you thought the hedge animal, and I'm thinking, oh, that's going to be in the movie. And then, of course, in the movie, Kubrick made it a dumbass maze, and there were no hedge animals, and that pissed me off. Because I didn't get to see my creepy hedge animals. But the book scared me like that. There were scenes in Salem's Lot that scared me just reading it. So, you know, you hope that when it's on the screen, you're going to get scared. And as a kid, I was scared by seeing Return of Count Yorga at age 11. And I was frightened to death by seeing gargoyles in the TV movie Gargoyles. I mean, yeah, people going, it's a little cheesy thing. But I'm sorry, but when that gargoyle peeks over the edge of the bed and you see his claw to hands and you're 14 years old, it still scared you.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I was 12 when that came out. I remember the year of it. But Kolchak and Night Stalker, the first TV movie with, you know, when he's going up against the vampire. Holy shit, TV film still scared you.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, and if you want to know what really scared me, the opening for Creature Feature played the Henry Mancini song Experiment in Terror. Now that was Experiment in Terror wasn't even a horror film; it was a crime drama. But that song Experiment in Terror is one of the creepiest openings ever. That music made for a horror film. So when they put that in front of a horror anthology in Chicago for Creature Feature, just hearing that music, people Google the Experiment in Terror the song on YouTube later. But just mm-hmm. that music will scare, just makes you, you know, it's scary music. It's the best horror music. It's like Halloween's iconic theme, you know. The Carpenter came up with the Jaws theme. You know you're going to get scared you hear that music. And I'm done.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was going to say, you know, and we all know the moment in TV that scared you the most was when the shadows first appeared on Babylon 5.
Yes, yes. The first time I saw the shadows in Babylon 5, I never thought that show would scare me. But when I saw them come out of nowhere, just the image of their ships or whatever the hell they were, I'm like, holy crap. And yeah, you get scared. That was scary to me in my 40s or 50s, whatever it was. Yes.
Well, I remember,
I did get scared by that.
You know, I was collecting comics back then. And the comic book shop was the only place anybody was fucking talking about that show, obviously. And we went, and, you know, I went in there, and somebody said, hey, you watched that Babylon 5 show, right? I was like, yeah. They said, what the hell was that that shot that ship? And I was like, I don't know, but that was creepy as fuck. So, you know, that was, and they were like, yeah, it looks like a fucking spider or a squid. I was like, yeah, it's, I said, but I can't wait to find out what it is.
I mean, that's the first time you ever thought you never thought that a spider coming out of space would scare you, but that's what those ships reminded you of some creepy insect flying creature in outer space. And it was just the way I don't know how they come up with it, but it scared me.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep. So, you know, now before we get to more favorites, is there something in horror, in terms of like a trend in horror that we don't much care for, and I'll pass this to you, Carl, to start.
Oh, without a doubt, slashers. Not a slasher fan.
Yeah, me either.
Now, when so you get to Halloween, or even Black Christmas, the proto slashers, and There was something wonderful about the tension that was done in both those films. Well, once you get to Friday the 13th, the switch isn't to the tension. It's to the goriness of the kills.
Mm-hmm.
And this was something that they specifically dealt with in terms of 80s slashers. It was all about the gore. Of course, that was good for Tom Savini, and I don't really have a problem with Tom dealing with that, but not my cup of tea. Not even close.
Yeah, it came down to how creative can you be killing somebody, you know? And because everyone hates Jason X, but they love it when the two girls are in the sleeping bag and he's banging the sleeping bag against the tree and the holodeck image thing. And I'm like, and that's the only reason they like it. Oh, that was a great kill, you know, but no, it wasn't. It wasn't even real kids, but oh my God, you're so stupid. It got to about how creative could we kill people rather than having any kind of story or tension. And that's what's wrong. Got where slashers, a lot of them, there's not that many I even bother to buy or watch. There's a few. I only own the first two Halloween films. I do have the Friday 13th on DVD, but only but that's because I got them real cheap. So I'm not going to buy Blu-rays either.
I actually have to say that I rewatched the first Friday the 13th for the first time since I'd first seen it. I did that a couple years back, and that's not a long movie. That's like an hour and 20 minutes or something. It took me like 2 hours to get through it because I kept pausing it, doing something else, checking my phone. You know, I don't know, maybe I scratched my balls for a few minutes.
No,
to get my mind off of how fucking bad that movie is, because, Jesus Christ, this launched a franchise? What the fuck? So, Aaron, what about you?
There is not a subgenre that I don't at least have a passing appreciation for in horror. I love slashers. I'll be the one who says it. I love slashers. I prefer the ones that play with the genre. Things that are newer, things like since Scream, that have really, I think, deconstructed what they were doing in the 80s. Even in the 80s, I think Wes Craven really nailed the maybe Wes Craven's just the master of the slasher because he made the Scream franchise as well. But like Nightmare on Elm Street is so much better than Friday the 13th, and I don't think that's even debatable. Obviously there are I don't like torture porn. I don't think that's truly horror. I think that's just like, let's see how much blood and tits we can get on the screen in 80 minutes and see how much money we can make off it. So torture porn is like a bad offshoot of the slasher. I think it's the logical, like the death of the slasher. Saw deconstructed the slasher, and then Hostel was like, ooh, that was a good idea. Let's see how much grosser we can make it. And then everyone's like, ooh, let's outgross Hostel. And then it became this whole thing.
Hostel doesn't really show as much as it implies. That's the funny thing about it. Yeah,
true.
It's totally
very true.
But they don't show as much as they imply more, and there's not as much gore on the screen. They just make you feel like there's going to be, and then they back away, you know.
Very
and,
true.
You know, it's mostly a lot of people screaming.
Yes. Except for, and I'll never get the image out of my head, the Achilles tendon cut. Something I'll never see.
Now, I will say that the first Saw film, I thought, actually had some interesting material in it, and some of the flashback stuff in the following Saw films was decent or even pretty good, but the rest of the films as films just don't work for me. Torture porn is just violence in for its own sake, and to me, if there's nothing other than the thing itself, it's not worth seeing or doing.
The problem with Saw is, if you, and I have tried to do this, if you watch them all in order, it's one very complicated story, back and forth, flashbacks, and, you know, and everything, and it's very convoluted, and there's continuity errors in it. But the thing is, to get to the actual meat of the story and all the intricacies of it, you have to suffer through the torture parts, and while some are creative, some are just not very good.
I think when James Wan left the franchise, it really suffered. I think that he held it together. I think he had a truly artistic vision for something that was just kind of a grisly story.
And maybe even Darren Lynn Bousman, who's a much lesser talent than Juan, but at least is competent. Once they were both gone, like with the third or maybe the fourth film, that's when for me it just was like, yeah, these totally suck now.
Yeah.
It became a let's put one out at Halloween and make a few dollars.
Yeah.
Just like the Halloween franchise and Friday the 13th franchise became. They became yearly staples to make money.
Yep. Now, I just saw an interesting horror-type movie. I'm not going to say it's a great movie. I'm not even going to say it's a good movie, but it hasn't. But like many films by this director, it has an interesting concept where maybe the execution is where it falls apart, and that is Old, the new M. Night Shyamalan movie. It's really neat. If you don't know the concept for it, these people end up on a beach, and they start to age, and they can't get off the beach. I'm not going to say more because it is worth seeing. It's not a long movie, about an hour and 40 minutes. So he keeps the run time down, which is nice. He's a director that as I was watching this, I thought, you know, he is a horror director, but he's real old school in that he understands you don't always have to use gore to try to evoke a sense of horror. Now, he's not always successful, but he at least understands that.
Agreed.
I mean, I still think The Sixth Sense is utterly brilliant. I know people like to say it's cheesy, but I think it's a great fucking movie.
Yeah, and The Village had potential, but oh boy, did that fall apart.
You know, I actually really like The Village, but it may also be that I think that movie is just so well made technically that I love that aspect so much. That, you know, the fact that I figured it out 90%, 95% of it from the first trailer I saw months in advance doesn't bother me.
I think that The Village suffered from the twist syndrome, and that if he gave us the twist as part of the just part of the background information at the beginning of the film, it would have worked. It would have been a stronger film.
And I don't want to say much one way or the other about his latest work, but I think he's starting to learn that lesson. I'm not saying it's there yet, but he's starting to, I think. So now to Alan. Do we have a favorite type of horror film?
For me, it tends to be some, well, for one, it's usually older horror films, but I don't mind, I like a good old haunted house flick at times, but my favorite, it runs in a, like something along the line of Blood on Satan's Claw, which is what you call it. That involves witches, but I usually don't like witches, but it involves witch hunting. So witch finds
Bruja
general,
films?
Blood on Satan's Claw, huh?
No, that's a specific subgenre. I thought you were going for a specific type of witch hunter movie.
What's that called? That kind of horror is called, well, it's trying to think of what they call it.
Like
the
witch
ones
and things
that
like
are
that?
Set, I don't know. But give me a good vampire film. Give me a good, just a good British scary film of some kind. I'm my Black Sunday is a vampire film by Bava. That is one of my favorites. Now, a lot of people don't consider this, but Brotherhood of the Wolf, it's a multi-genre film, but it is a scary movie in parts, and you know it in parts because you have a creature, so you don't see it very much, and there's not that many kills, but. There, you know, that movie does involve some aspects of horror, and I do love that film. It's in my top five. But if you want to go for horror, I'd say Black Sunday with Bava, Planet of the Vampires, which is science fiction horror, and Bay of Blood, which is a proto slasher, because. A lot of some of the kills in Bay of Blood are replicated in Friday the 13th.
Oh yeah, Friday the 13th is almost directly related to Bay of Blood.
There's a lot of things going on that you could say are similar, but there's a couple of kills that are just borrow one right from the other, and I'm, you know, somebody's like, oh look, let's use that in our movie, let's use that. Yeah, but. Bay of Blood to me, you know, that film just is if you want to go for a horror film, that's good. But I also like I said, a simplistic horror film like a TV film like Gargoyles or that ABC Movie of the Week, you know, that was an anthology film that scared me as a kid, or the one with Karen Black at Trilogy of Terror. You know, but I was scared by the original Dracula when I saw it at age 7. What never scared me? Godzilla films didn't scare me. But vampire films, the ones with the Frankenstein monster, those were scary back in the day. What I don't like today is, oh, so much of these films with the found footage stuff, I rarely find one that I like. I did find one, and that was Grave Encounters 1 and 2. Those films are found footage, but they scare the hell out of me, and I gotta say, that I love. But most of the found footage stuff, I'm not a big fan. But Grave Encounters was the most recent film of recent memory that actually scared me, and. Before that, you have to go back to Hammer stuff, where you know I get scared from Vampire Circus had some images that I thought were scary, but I was younger then. You know, when I was, it's hard to scare me now. I mean, like I said, I got scared by the spiders and the bad guys in Babylon 5. I mean, and I that wasn't even meant to be a horror sequence, but it still scared me.
that shows how effective it was.
What I can't watch anymore is I'm not a big fan of Dog Soldiers. I thought was scary, but that was a werewolf film, and those are very creatively designed werewolves, and they used, you know, it wasn't CGI, it was real prosthetics, and Dog Soldiers was scary because of it. So that I'll give credit. There's a modern horror film. That actually scared me. So what I don't get scared of, but I just get annoyed by, is zombie films. I don't, they're more gross out, and I don't care for that. I really don't like fast zombies and the excessive gore that comes with those. No, I don't want to watch that. I'm not into that. I know it can be scary, but I'd rather go with a more psychological horror, like something like I Saw the Devil, which, you know, not a horror film per se, but still riveting in a sense, because it's mental horror. You know, Ichi the Killer is a lot of gore, but is it scary? No, it's just gross.
So, Carl,
so, you know, everybody
favorite,
has a different
favorite genre.
Well, there are two. My regular co-host Rachel says basically that if death was in my house and I was hiding from death, all death has to do is find a religious horror movie and say, "Hey, Carl, there's a religious horror movie." I said, "Great, let me watch it." Then you can kill me. So that's one. Anything with any type of, particularly if it's really well thought out, as opposed to the devil and, you know, the angel and that sort of thing. The other thing is, I love me a really good ghost story because those deal with the unknown and they ratchet up the tension without gore. And I'm not just talking classic ones like The Innocents and all those, The Uninvited. But I'm also talking about more modern ones, particularly what's the name of that? The Peter Medak one with George C. Scott, The Changeling.
Mm-hmm.
And even more modern, The Innkeepers.
I think it's a little more modern than that one. And those are both great, but The Others with Nicole Kidman.
Oh, The Others was
no,
so great.
I can't stand that one. I got that in 10 seconds. What was happening?
I knew what was happening, but I still thought it was really well done. I thought
you know
it was,
a better version of that. Vincenzo Natali's Haunter.
Mm-hmm.
You probably have
now,
never seen it.
I want to go back a little while. I think it was a play for today on British TV, and it had Michael Holdern in it, but it was an adaptation of Whistle and I'll Come for You.
Yes.
You can probably find it on YouTube. It's only about a half hour long.
Yep. I know that one. Someone just mentioned it, and I got to see it not too long ago, like a week ago.
Wow. Coincidence. But, Aaron, what about you?
So other than anything that really is working to deconstruct the genre, I love the romance of ghosts. Of a good monster film. I think that the metaphors are always
We're losing you, by the way.
Yep. A couple of you fading in and out.
Okay. So monster films, ghost films, I really like the literary value of those. And the home invasion film, I think, is probably the single scariest subgenre as far as like if it's going to actually scare me. Because it's so real. Yeah. But the most recent film, I kept thinking about this, the most recent film that truly just scared my pants off was called The Autopsy of Jane Doe. That was brilliant. With Emile Hirsch and Brian Cox, and from 2016, and it's just brilliant, moody, closed door thriller, supernatural, terrifying.
got it by hand right here.
There's been some really great horror. Like I would argue that we're coming into almost a new golden age with some of the auteurs that are coming out, with like Robert Eggers, Mike Flanagan, that are really breathing new life into the genre. But as far as like films that truly scared me, that one was top notch.
Oh, I know. I want to say, I forgot this. The last thing that really Kingdom Hospital, the original The Kingdom by Lars von Trier, not the Stephen King knockoff, but the original, when I saw The Kingdom on, they showed like the whole thing, the first series on HBO or something, and I was watching it at 2 or 3 in the morning, I got friggin' scared. But that was horror, and it was that was some brilliant shit. Yeah, I was home alone, so yeah, I got scared. The Kingdom, watch it.
Oh yeah,
not the brilliant. Stephen King kind of had to dumb it down.
Agreed. Oh. So, Adam, are you with us, or are you still coughing?
Oh, yeah. No, sorry. I was definitely coughing. Aaron had mentioned being in a new golden age, and here's the thing. For me, I don't need a horror movie to scare me, but I definitely need it to be interesting. It either has to evoke something classic in a new way, or a meaningful way. It has to have some sort of stylish touch that isn't there just for aesthetics. There have been a lot of very effective and different types of horror films. A Quiet Place, the first one. I'm not as big on the second one. I think the second one, maybe, I don't know if it was just it suffered from my anticipation for it, because I loved the first one so much. I'll probably revisit it in a year or so and hopefully be able to reevaluate it. I thought The Witch was great, and I also thought that The Lighthouse was great. But, Aaron had mentioned some real auteurs. There's Eggers, there's Muschietti. Now, did Eggers do both The Lighthouse and The Witch?
Yes.
That's what I thought. Now, there's the guy that did Midsommar. Now, I didn't like Midsommar. Midsommar is any good. People say it's The Wicker Man. It is and it isn't, but if you want to watch The Wicker Man, watch the fucking Wicker Man. It exists, so why not? But, we are in an era of some very interesting directors, and he mentioned Mike Flanagan, and Mike Flanagan, of course, just had Black Mass on Netflix, and just got announced today or last night that his next Netflix project is going to be an adaptation of The Fall of the House of Usher. This guy is doing some of the best horror that any one director's done in a long time. We all talked about how we don't mind violence or gore, but we prefer it to not just be about that. And I think what these guys that we're talking about now have in common is, there is violence and occasionally a gory bit here or there, but they understand that you don't need that to be scary or interesting. And I think that's what makes for good horror, is getting the sense that the people in charge of the movie or the TV show aren't going to rely on cheap tricks.
Yeah.
So are we all agreed
that we like The Witch?
Yes.
Yes.
Did everyone like that? Yeah.
That's a great fucking film.
I had some people poo-poo that I talked to, and they're like, oh, I don't know. They just don't like it because it's not a modern horror. It's set in modern times. You know, they actually had to listen to the accents or read the subtitles, and, you know, I'm like, forget over it.
I'll always love that film for launching Anya Taylor-Joy, who, in short order, has become one of our best young actresses. So,
yeah.
Thank you for giving her a career.
There's just some things you just gotta stick with and, you know, try new things. You know, we all had to get into found footage, and it's hit or miss. And something like The Witch, you have to, yeah, it's not an easy watch, but I'm sorry, you know, just because there's not a slasher, a killing every 3 minutes, and get over it.
Yeah,
you know,
really.
Some things are different. What about a more science fiction take on horror? Like, did anyone see The Color Out of Space with Nicolas Cage recently? I mean,
that's a nifty film.
Yeah.
What?
I said that's a nifty film, and actually, if you're speaking about Lovecraft, there are two interesting Lovecraft movies from the same I think it's one of the Lovecraft Society people. They do basically really high end fan films, and they did a silent version of Call of Cthulhu, which is really fucking cool.
Yeah.
And then they did a really neat, almost fully faithful, not quite, but almost fully faithful version of The Whisperer in Darkness.
And that was really, really cool. Yeah, both are good. Yeah. Now, having seen Color Out of Space and liking it, does anyone consider Willy's Wonderland a horror film, or do you consider that something a totally different genre? It wasn't scary per se, but it was definitely creepy.
I didn't see that one.
I liked it a lot, you know, but I don't consider it. I don't know if I want to consider it horror or not. I guess you can, because the robots, something's making them come alive, but.
If you want to talk about sci-fi horror, what about something like Event Horizon or
that's the pinnacle.
Or Alien.
The pinnacle. You wish the lost footage could be found, because I watched that again last week, and that is one of the scariest damn films ever.
I'm going to tell you something. I sat there in the movie theater when that movie came out, and that movie came out in, like, what was it, 97, I think?
Yeah, something like that.
97, 90, 98. So I was like 16, 17. Because I'm 40. 97. So I was 16 when that movie came out. And the thing is the audience I saw it with, we fucking loved it. And that was a packed fucking theater. But the movie was getting shit reviews. And a couple of us, we were like, wait, people are hating this movie? This is fucking great. And then, you know, news quickly spread that, you know, that the director had about, you know, God knows how much footage that he wished he could have kept in. And of course, rumors said, hey, maybe they'll put it on the VHS. Maybe they'll you know, because there were always these rumors, even back in those days, that maybe they'll, you know, put it back in on VHS.
Yeah.
Because remember those VHS days. And it turns out, the studio probably, like, you know, put it in someone's pipe and let them smoke it. I mean, Jesus, I wish that footage could be found, because, you know, that's an awesome film, and I don't care what anybody says. I've seen it twice, and I love it.
I've seen it 7 times, and Shout Factory put out that Blu-ray, recently, and Yeah, it's got a lot of nice, nifty extras on it. But if they couldn't find the extra footage or unused footage for that particular edition, then it's just not there. I don't think anybody's got it anymore. But it would have been nice to see. But the story there is they wanted to put the movie out, and then the studio said, such and such film's not ready. We got to move you up to the summer, and you're going to go up against these big name films. And they're going to like, we won't be ready. And they're like, you're going to have to finish it. So, you know, things got – and then they cut it down because get more people in the theater if the film's shorter and everything nonsense like that. So it's a bunch of studio involvement ruined a potentially brilliant, brilliant film.
Yep, yep. So now everybody else has seen that film, right?
Oh, yeah. I haven't.
Man, get yourself to a copy of that thing.
Yeah, Event Horizon is a must-watch. You'll be kicked out of this group if you don't see it within the next 6 months.
No.
You know? I mean, they're prerequisites for being a cinephile. Come on.
Okay, whatever.
Yeah. Hey, you know, there's also a prerequisite for getting kicked out of DLN, and that's mentioning the Sinful Dwarf, but we won't do that again, will we?
You just did. Okay, a week probation.
Honestly, you want to talk about a movie that's simply horrible, not horror, there's your movie. But that's as close as I come to mentioning that again. Yeah. Needle. So, do we have just some, now we've talked a lot about movies, but what about TV? Now, Carl, you and I have talked before about our love of Brimstone, because I can't remember if Alan's seen Brimstone, but I know the two of us have. So, would you like to talk more about Brimstone or some of those shows?
Absolutely. I'll talk about Brimstone forever and ever and ever. Seriously. Just to give you an idea of the time frame, I was in college for my master's in Chicago. And that was on Friday nights. And Peter Horton and John Glover. Peter Horton is a former detective who killed his wife's rapist in cold blood and then dies and goes to hell. And there's 137 souls that escape from hell. And it's his job from the devil to find them and send them back to hell. And if he gets all 137, he'll have a second lease on life. Okay, and that's the setup. They then fabularized that later with Reaper, but such a great show and very, very unique in its take. I wouldn't say it was scary, but it was definitely creepy as fuck. And
it was
definitely moody. And the other thing about it too, I will always argue the best devil on screen ever was John Glover. He was magnificent. Mm-hmm. He was so good in that role. He was only supposed to be in the first episode. And they said, holy shit, they put him in every episode. Of course, that was canceled after, 12 episodes, I think?
Yeah, 12 or 13 episodes. I used to have them all on VHS because I recorded it every week. But, you know, the thing is don't forget, it wasn't just Peter Horton and Julian Glover. It also had
Lori Petty,
and then the one that played Ash. God, I just forgot her name.
I can't think of her name, but, yeah, they had Ash. And not mm-hmm. not
was it, was, it Terry, was it Terry Polo?
I think it was Terry Polo, actually.
Yeah, but that was great. And of course, you know, you go back. There's other ones, but any other horror TV that you can think of that you want to talk about, Carl?
Actually, there's one other person I want to talk about real quickly,
as I was checking out this episode, I said, who can I mention that nobody else is going to mention? Okay? And I came up with somebody. And that would be Curtis Harrington. Curtis Harrington, okay, do you guys know the name and know who I'm talking about? Anybody?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
You do? Okay.
Go ahead.
So,
go ahead.
He deals both with TV, did a lot of TV movies, including How Awful About Alan, and numerous films that were really good. He also did Night Tide in 1961 with Dennis Hopper, and that's the mermaid movie.
Yeah, I have that.
Which is absolutely fantastic. Also, he basically did Queen of Blood, which is the precursor, or one of the precursors, to Alien. Okay?
Yep.
The man was amazing. And he also did How Awful About Alan. He did the couple of films with Shelley Winters, and then another great psychological horror movie that nobody friggin' remembers is Games, with James Caan and Simone Signoret, which is just like creepy as fuck, and really, really good mood person. And he also felt very, very much connected to Val Lewton. So again, he's not showing any type of blood or anything like that. No gore. It's all mood. And if you don't know Curtis Harrington, check him out. Also, The Killing Kind, which is not exactly a horror movie, but it's horrible. It's scary about how nasty that film gets. Yeah. Okay. So I'm done now.
I want to mention a couple of.
Go on.
More modern. For me, The X-Files could be scary at times, and they were. There were some scary episodes. There's no question about that. And I like those. But a show that gets forgotten in the mix is Millennium, and with Lance Henriksen. And while there's only three seasons, it did have some scary episodes. I got to say, and it was creepy weird. There's that one in the diner with the demons in the diner, and, you know, very, you can't forget that one. So got to give a shout out to those, you know, to those two for reason people can probably find. And then if you want to go more old school, go to Night Gallery.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Night Gallery and Thriller are pretty much the gold standards for the older horror shows. I mean, hell, Stephen King still claims he did it in his wonderful Danse Macabre book, and then in more recent interviews, he still to this day says there's never been a better horror series than Thriller. He said maybe Night Gallery comes close, elements of Outer Limits and Twilight Zone, but for what he considers what horror typifies, it's Thriller and Night Gallery.
Well, there was one episode of Night Gallery that I remembered as a kid, and I only remember the one about a, you know, it has to do with spiders, and this, you know, this guy like flushes a spider down the drain, and then things happen with spiders that get very creepy. And that episode stuck with me, and you know, all my life from since age 10 or so when I first saw it. And
spiders can be fucking scary. I mean, think about it.
It was scary to me, but Night Gallery is coming out on Blu-ray. Hey guys, you can buy it now on Blu-ray instead of going searching for the DVDs. But you know, there you go. So it's getting a Blu-ray release, so it must be okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So now, what about you, Aaron? Anything for you?
Continue on.
Flanagan and mention his two lovely, lovely ghost series for Netflix, The Haunting of Hill House and The Haunting of Bly Manor.
Yeah.
As far as television miniseries go, as far as television horror goes, both are just top notch. And it really, I think they cemented him. I really like his movies. I think he's a really fantastic filmmaker. But the work he did on those two miniseries are really what catapulted him, in my mind, to the next level.
Yeah, and I actually liked his work on Dr. Sleep.
Yes, yeah. I have to 100% agree with Alan about X-Files. When they went the horror route, they made some of the scariest episodes of television I've ever seen.
Can I interrupt right here and ask, does anyone remember the episode, I think it was either season one or season two, where Scully and Mulder were in a car in the forest, and these threads came down like spiders or insects or something and covered them in the car. I remember seeing that as a kid, and I'm not going to say I was scared, but I thought it was one of the creepiest fucking things I'd ever seen in a movie or TV show.
Yep. That was scary.
Yeah, and then, you had the Fluke Man, you had Tombs, you had the episode Home, which was about the incest family of cannibals, and, they wanted to go for it.
The first episode of television to ever get a TVMA, right?
Right. Yeah, and then they didn't rerun it until, ever for many years.
Until they put it out on VHS.
Except, of course, lucky motherfuckers like myself who were taping the X-Files. I was like, hey, suckers, I got my copy on VHS.
Yeah, I had it too.
Yep.
Now we have it on Blu-ray, but,
Mm-hmm. But, Aaron, you mentioned, Mike Flanagan, of course, I mentioned Dr. Sleep, but what about some of the older Stephen King miniseries, especially, say, It?
Oh, yeah, like
or The
It
Stand.
Or The Stand. Yeah. Salem's Lot, both versions of Salem's Lot, because let's be honest, the Rob Lowe one was actually very good. Stephen King, he has written so much, and there's been so many bad adaptations that I think people forget how many good ones there are too. He's such a magnificent writer in evoking mood that if a screenwriter and director can successfully get it to screen, which they can't always because sometimes it's too in the text, which happens. But when
look at the Dark Tower, what happened there?
Or the recent Lisi's story, which I found to be unbearable, even though I love the novel. His work is such that when you really get a hold of it, that you can hit it a long ways.
And ladies and gentlemen, this might be a good time to announce that in about a year from now, give or take a few weeks, we will be doing a spotlight episode on all of Stephen King's movies and television.
Ooh. Nice.
Yes, we planned that far ahead on this show for certain episodes.
No.
Well,
he's the only one that plans this far ahead,
trust me.
Yeah, only you do that.
Well, there was a time that we were talking about doing it for this year, and that's why it's planned out so far.
Yeah, we're like, shit, there's no way to make an episode effective this quickly.
Yeah.
Not with everything else that was coming up over the summer. If we hadn't had anything coming up over the summer, it would have been this episode would have been pushed till like 2 weeks, and then it would have been the episode that's coming at the end of the month, and it would have been Stephen King to kick the month off. So, you know. But you juggle the schedule and it works out all the same.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, I just revealed a little bit of how the sausage is made.
Yes,
you did.
That's
the horror story right there.
Oh, before we move on, I want to talk about someone who is low-key a all-time great horror genre filmmaker,
mm-hmm.
who is never thought of because he's also a not low-key all-time art house director, and that's Ingmar Bergman. Hour of the Wolf and Seventh Seal are both incredible horror films. And
yep.
people don't see that because of, like, the existential questions that they're asking. But if you look at their tone, if you look at the mood, if you look at even just the concepts that they're playing with, those are horror films. And we don't talk about that enough.
No.
No, you don't. And that's very true.
So do we have some, you know, as we start to wrap this up, do we have some favorite movies or TV shows that we haven't gotten to mention yet? Alan?
Well, I already mentioned Gargoyles at the beginning, but if anybody wants to see a creepy TV movie, Gargoyles with Bernie Casey was very creepy in the early 70s and highly recommended. It's on DVD. The Night Stalker and the Night Strangler with Darren McGavin that spawned the Kolchak TV series are available on Blu-ray, and they're scary, very creepy in their own rights, and worth getting. Other than that, buy yourself a copy of Black Sunday done by Mario Bava, and watch that for Halloween, and you'll be satisfied. Or go the other route and get Lair of the White Worm, and that'll creep you out for a good year.
Oh, now shit! Now there's somebody we haven't mentioned, and it's Ken Russell. So let's just
give a nod
to him because we don't want to go into an hour-long discussion on that guy.
Yeah, but Lair of the White Worm is definitely one creepy-ass horror film, and I saw it in a small theater with like 20 people in D.C. one time when it came out, and I was like, what did I just watch?
You know, it is. It is one of the weirdest fucking films ever. It's also one of the most oddly watchable horror films of that era, or really any. It's a fantastic movie. I don't care what some people say.
All I got to say about that is Peter Capaldi playing a bagpipe in kilts, basically distracting Amanda Dunahoe doing sort of a Legos the Lobe dance. It is beautiful. Beautiful. I just watched that a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm. I got it right here.
I watched it about a year ago and for the first time in a long time, and I was like, damn, that's entertaining.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, Carl, you?
Yeah, I got to give a nod
to a movie that absolutely scared the living shit out of me when I was like 7 years old. Now, I'm older than most of you, okay? So I grew up in the 60s, and this has got to be 64, 65. In Pittsburgh, they had Chiller Theater, which was by Chili Billy Cardelli. And, of course, we should also mention George Romero. You know, God bless him. But that's not the movie I'm going to. But I saw this movie that absolutely scared the living shit out of me. I couldn't revisit it until I was in high school. And that would be Fiend Without a Face. That's the one with the hopping brains. That suck your brains out and that. And it's a British film and some great stop motion in it. But the wonderful thing about it is that 90% of the movie, the monsters are invisible. So all it is sound design. And they make this terrible sound. And then when you do see them, shoot them and all this red, this black gut comes out of them. One of the grossest films in the 50s you've ever seen. It is beautiful. And it's so good that Criterion, I think it's now out of print, but Criterion put out an edition of it.
Yes,
that's
yes,
how
did.
Well thought out it is.
Yep.
But is that Eyes Without a Face?
No, that is Fiend Without a Face.
Yeah.
It's a British
Canadian
co-production. British Canadian co-production. I think it's Grant Marshall that stars in it. It's wonderful. It's about thought monsters, and the way you kill them is you blow up the nuclear power plant. And guess who was thinking of remaking it, but he decided to do The Fly instead? That would be David
Cronenberg.
Yep. And we'll get to him in a minute. But Aaron, any films you want to mention before we start wrapping this up?
Well, Carl just mentioned the movie from his childhood. So in third grade, I watched what was supposed to be a comedy called Ernest Scared Stupid. And was totally traumatized by it. Actually, I went back and watched it in grad school. Finally worked up the nerve. Found a three-pack of Ernest movies at Walmart. And that was one of the movies that was in the pack. Bought the pack just so I could face my childhood trauma. Rewatched it. And it was still scary. I mean, not truly scary, but... like, I could see why it terrified me as a third grader. After that, we can cut to Cronenberg because that's...
Yeah. Well, you know, the thing is we haven't mentioned some of the really older horror films, and we could do a whole show on that, and in fact, maybe we will. We'll see. But I want to just give a nod to some of the old monster movies and stuff that came out, and the old like vampire and ghost films and proto horror films, just in a general sense, from the silent and early talkie era and up through the 40s. And that is my way of kind of hinting towards something. But, Carl, I'm going to let you have the floor for a minute to tell us what's coming up on Deviant Legion before I announce.
Now, why don't you go ahead and let me get ready for that, okay? Because I'm not at the computer.
This is the time. So I'm going to make the announcement for my show at the end of yours.
I can't do it. Go do something else and come back. I can't do it.
You can't announce what's coming up next week on your show?
No, I got to get in front of the computer, and I'm not there, Adam. Go.
Well, I will go into a discussion of something else very quickly while Carl walks from one end of his place to the other, apparently. We did our very first episode of the show on Unusual Vampires. And now, it's not my favorite vampire movie ever, but it is definitely one of the most stylish vampire films I've ever seen. And I don't think any horror-themed show can do this genre justice without mentioning Dreyer's Vampyr. So I know each of you have seen that. So real quick, a thought from each of you on Vampyr, starting with you, Alan.
That actually can be kind of creepy, scary if you've not seen it before. Even a rewatch or scenes in it that are iconic. It's somebody, you know, not used to working with sound, and that shows, but it still has an atmosphere beyond, unlike any other film of its era. And, I highly recommend it. You can find it on Blu-ray, and it's definitely worth looking for. Look, it's not a vampire film like Dracula or something like that. It's different, but it's black and white and slow and German, but I give it a shot, folks. It's definitely a beautiful movie, and there are scenes in it, once you see them once, you'll never forget them again.
Mm-hmm. Like the scene with the shadows.
The shadows and the guy with the scythe and all sorts of images that are just get etched in your memory.
Yep. Now, some of you may know and some of you may not. Aaron and I went to school together. We went to grad school together, and I had gone. There was a Criterion sale at Barnes & Noble, and we both had a habit of sitting down to class early because the place that our class was in was an auditorium-style stadium seating type of class, and it had a big screen with a nice projector. And all you had to do in order to use it, if the room was empty, which the room was for about 2 hours before our class, so sometimes you'd find people in there studying quietly or watching a movie on the screen. Well, I decided that I was going to watch one of my movies before my films as literature course that I was taking just for fun. And Aaron came in about 5 minutes after I got there. I had just set the movie up. So, Aaron, you remember this. You were like, hey, what's that? I said, Dreyer's Vampyr, and you were like, ooh. So what did you think of Vampyr?
I love Vampyr. It's probably the greatest German expressionism film that wasn't made in Germany or during the silent era. It is a silent film with sound. It has dialogue, but it's Alan's right. It was early sound, and it was Dreyer's first sound film, and the sound was a little sloppy, but the pictures just so gorgeous. Dreyer is one of my, I don't know, top favorite directors. And he only made a handful of films, like 10 films, and at least 4 of them are stone cold masterpieces.
Yeah.
And this is one of them. And oddly, it's not his only horror film, because Day of Wrath is also a horror film. And you could make an argument that Passion of Joan of Arc is also a horror film, though it's completely different, not what you would actually think of as a horror film. But the shadows and the architecture, and it's just so moody. Now I have to watch it again. So.
Yeah, but what I thought, and you're right. I mean, you're making me, and I'm making myself want to watch that movie again. And I watched it like a year or two ago. But yeah, but I have to say, I've seen it at home since then. But there really is something different watching that particular movie. Now, it doesn't work with every movie. Some movies are just as good at, I know this is blasphemy for some, but some movies are just as good at home as on a large screen. But there is something special about watching that movie on like a 10 by 10 projected screen, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Carl, are you ready now?
I am ready now, but first I'll go into what I think of Vampyr. Just the thing that really gets me about Vampyr, and we talk about the lighting, but the fog and just that impending sense of doom. And there's something, there's a real poetry to that film that is basically gone from most of the silent and early sound movies, with maybe the exception of James Whale. It's like a fever dream. And you just can't break the fever and can't stop dreaming. And the fog and the shadows and everything just make it just so eerie and so creepy and so wonderful to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. So what is coming up for the rest of the shows on DLN?
Okay, see, I needed to be in front of my computer and not on the other seat that I was on when you were talking to me. Okay, if you get the head. thank you. Somebody got the head. Okay, so we are basically off this weekend. Okay, but we start on Tuesday, and I'm very, very happy finally to get director Scooter McRae with us. Scooter is a really good friend of mine, and he did a lot of DIY films in the 90s during the DVD era. And one of his films is called Shatter Dead, and Shatter Dead is being released in a restored version by Vinegar Syndrome. And you'll love the tagline. The tagline is "God hates you." It is something to watch. Trust me. And along with Scooter, we're going to have special guest on that show, Joe Badon, who also did a very strange religious science fiction horror film called Sister Tempest. And I just can't wait for the two of them to start chatting, because it's going to be quite a chat. So we're going to have a lot of fun with that. Okay, and that's on Tuesday. Then on Friday, we are very, very happy. This is the 15th. We are doing a commentary watch of one of my favorite films of all time, and that would be Pontypool. Okay, and John Killian of XV Planus podcast and also has guested with us quite a bit is going to be my guest for that, and that's going to be a lot of fun. Then on Sunday night, the 17th, it's the return of Doc Sludge, a.k.a. Eric, and we're going to be doing a commentary watch of Roar. Now, if you don't know what Roar is, that's the infamous lion movie where basically everybody got maimed by lions because they had no idea what the fuck they were doing.
And that would include
director Noel Marshall, Tippi Hedren, their daughter Melanie Griffith, director Jan DeBont, and director Ted Nicolau. So, yeah, and I'm trying to get Ted Nicolau on that to comment on it, but I don't think we're going to get him. Then on Monday the 18th, I'm very happy to partner with Patrick Crane. He's an author and film historian out of Oklahoma City, and he also deals with the Oklahoma Film Society. He's the head of that. And we're going to be doing sexploitation horror, both softcore and hardcore. And we're going to be doing that on the 18th.
So
yep.
far, that's what we've got for October. We got lots more planned for the next 2 weeks after that, but nothing set in stone yet. So that's what we have. So back to you, Aaron. I mean, Adam, sorry. Hi, Aaron.
So, before we say goodnight, there are three more weeks left in October. One week of which I have given to Carl, the other week which was open, and one week which is set. The one week which is set is the 29th. On the 29th, we will be doing an episode on the career of director David Cronenberg. However, our conversation tonight has inspired me to come up with an episode on the 22nd that is essentially a continuation of this episode without the TV element and with a specific focus, horror films prior to 1950.
Ooh.
With a special interest in films of the late 20s through the early 40s. So that first real golden era. You know, obviously there were some great films a little earlier in the 20s, but so probably really honestly it's going to be anything from around Der Golem and Nosferatu in the early 20s through maybe when did Son of Frankenstein come out? Ghost of Frankenstein?
43, 44, something like that, early 40s.
Yep. So really that first 24, 25 years of classic golden horror is what our next episode will be on. If, of course, I can get guests. So, you know, you guys are invited back. I have a couple of others that, you know, my inspiration has hit me. I'll see who I can get, including possibly well, I don't want to say.
The ghost of Val Lewton.
Oh, I wish. But maybe someone who's interviewed him.
Mm-hmm.
So with that, I want to thank everyone for coming and participating, everyone for listening. And we will, on the count of three, say goodnight. One, two, three. Good night.
Good night. Greetings and salutations. There, I said it.